Welcome to the deep dive. We take your sources, unpack the information, and pull out the key insights for you. Today, we're diving deep into economic growth. We've got this document here. It kind of lays out the meaning, how we measure it, what causes it, and you know the consequences. Our mission really is to unpack the big takeaways, get a solid grasp on what economic growth actually is, the best way to track it, the forces behind it, and its, well, its broad impacts.
Yeah, it's such a core concept, isn't it, for understanding, well, any economy, really. Like this material says, it affects everything, living standards, jobs, the country's overall financial health. It touches pretty much everyone.
It absolutely does. And to help us sort through this document, we've got our expert guide here.
Yeah.
So let's just dive in. When we say economic growth, what exactly are we talking about? What's the core idea in this material?
Okay, well, at its heart, the document defines it as the increase in the monetary value of goods and services produced by an economy over time. Think of it like the economy getting bigger, essentially. It's described as a key indicator of economic health, and the main tool for measuring it is gross domestic product, GDP.
Right, GDP. So it's about producing more valuable stuff. But why?
Yeah.
Why should the average person care? What are the direct benefits this document points to?
Well, the potential benefits are pretty significant when an economy is growing. The material lists things like higher living standards, you know, more access to goods, services, maybe better quality of life overall.
Makes sense.
It often leads to job creation, too. If companies are producing more, they generally need more people.
Right.
That can also boost government revenue, more taxes coming in, which can fund public services, schools, healthcare, that kind of thing.
Yep.
And importantly, it can help reduce poverty, creates opportunities, increases overall wealth.
So it's not just abstract numbers. It links directly to, like, people's daily lives and work.
The document also makes a distinction, doesn't it, about the type of growth, short-term versus long-term. Yes, that's a really crucial point it makes. Short-term growth, it says, is often driven by demand increasing. So people spending more, businesses investing more right now.
Okay, like a surge.
Exactly. But long-term growth, the kind that's more sustainable, that comes from deeper structural changes. Things like better education systems, big investments in infrastructure, roads, internet, or, you know, major technological advances that make the whole economy more productive over the long haul.
Ah, okay. So short-term is activity now, long-term is building the engine for later. And the source really stresses that going after this growth is a key goal for countries because it's tied so closely to, well, making people better off economically.
Precisely. It's seen as central to raising economic welfare.
All right, so we know what it is, why it matters. How do we actually track it? You mentioned GDP. How does this document define GDP, and are there different ways to look at it?
Yeah, so GDP, the document defines it as the total monetary value of all the final goods and services produced within a country's borders during a specific time, usually a year or maybe a quarter. It's trying to capture the total output.
Got it. Total output value.
But yes, and this is really key. Like you said, the document highlights the difference between nominal GDP and real GDP. And honestly, you can't really get a true sense of growth without understanding this difference.
Okay, lay it on us. What's the difference and why does it matter which one we use?
So nominal GDP, that's calculated using the prices that exist right now, the current prices for goods and services. The issue here, as the source points out, is inflation. If prices go up, nominal GDP can go up too, even if we didn't actually make any more stuff.
Ah, okay. So it includes price changes.
Exactly. It reflects today's market value. Real GDP, though, that's the one that's adjusted for inflation. It uses prices from a specific base year, like constant prices. This means it filters out the effect of rising prices.
So it shows the actual change in quantity.
Pretty much, yes. It reflects the true growth in the volume of output. It's a much better indicator for comparing growth over time because it removes that inflation distortion.
Right, right. So nominal can look bigger just because things cost more, but real tells you if we actually produced more. That adjustment seems vital for comparing across years.
It really is. If real GDP goes up, you know the economy genuinely produced more goods and services, not just that prices went up. It gives that clearer picture of performance.
Okay, that makes a lot more sense. And the document also mentions a few others. briefly.
Yeah.
Like GDP per capita.
Yeah, it touches on GDP per capita. That's just GDP divided by the population.
Yep.
Useful for getting a rough idea of average living standards and comparing between countries. And it also mentions the GDP growth rate itself, obviously, and using index numbers, which can help track changes over longer periods.
Okay. So we get what growth is, how to measure it, especially focusing on real GDP. What actually makes it happen? What does the document say are the main drivers, the causes?
Well, the document splits the causes into two main camps, demand-side factors and supply-side factors.
Okay.
Demand-side factors are all about increases in what's called aggregate demand, basically, the total spending in the economy. You might know the formula, AD, P plus I plus G plus XM.
Right, consumption, investment.
Exactly. C is consumption, household spending. If people feel confident or have more disposable income, they tend to spend more. I is investment. That's businesses spending on things like new machinery, technology, buildings. G is government spending, infrastructure projects, education, healthcare, defense, all that. And XM is net exports. So the value of what a country sells abroad minus what it buys from abroad. If exports rise or imports fall, that boosts demand.
And the document suggests things like lower interest rates or maybe tax cuts can push these up, make it cheaper to borrow or give people more cash.
Precisely. Those are typical ways to stimulate demand. Yeah. Then you have the supply side causes. These are more about increasing the economy's potential to produce, its capacity. The document lists several things here. Improvements in productivity, getting more output from the same inputs, basically being more efficient.
Right.
Investment in education and training, making the workforce more skilled. Technological advancements are huge. Obviously, new inventions, better processes. Also, more capital investment, more tools, machines. Efficient infrastructure is key. A good transport. Communication. Mm-hmm. Even things like discovering new natural resources or just having more workers available, maybe through immigration or people retiring later.
So demand is about the pool of people wanting to buy more. Supply is about the push, the economy being able to make more and better.
Yeah.
And the document seems to suggest you kind of need both for growth that lasts.
That's definitely the takeaway. You need the demand to keep things moving in the short term, but for sustainable growth, you need those supply side improvements that increase the economy's fundamental capacity.
Okay. Now let's talk about the other side of the coin. Growth sounds good, but the document is pretty careful to say it's not all positive, right?
Yeah.
What are the consequences, good and bad?
Yeah, it lays out both. On the positive side, a lot of it connects back to the benefits we mentioned earlier. Higher living standards, generally lower unemployment because more production needs more labor.
Mm-hmm.
Higher government revenue from taxes, which can fund better public services. Progress in reducing poverty, often linked to better social indicators like health outcomes, literacy rates. It can also encourage more business investment growth, often boost confidence and make a country's exports more competitive if growth comes from productivity gains.
Okay, so those are the upsides. What about the downsides?
Well, the document is quite clear that growth can bring significant negative consequences, especially if it's not managed well. Environmental damage is a really big one it highlights.
Yeah, I can see that.
More industrial activity often means more pollution, contributing to climate change, deforestation if resources aren't managed, resource depletion in general, and just generating more waste.
That feels like a direct trade-off sometimes. More production, more environmental strain.
It often is, unfortunately. The document also points to the risk of inflation.
How so?
Well, if demand grows too fast, faster than the supply side can keep up, the economy can overheat. This can lead to what's called demand pull inflation, too much money chasing too few goods, basically. Prices rise fast, and that can eat away at people's purchasing power.
Right, so growth that's too fast can backfire.
It can. Then there's the concern about income inequality.
Ah, yeah.
The benefits of economic growth don't always trickle down evenly. The document notes that the gap between the rich and the poor can actually widen during periods of growth if policies aren't in place to ensure broader distribution.
That's a major social issue tied to economic changes.
Definitely. And related to the environmental point, it mentions the potential for overuse of resources, especially finite ones like fossil fuels or certain minerals. Unchecked growth can lead to unsustainable practices that deplete these resources faster than they can regenerate, if they regenerate at all.
Okay.
And finally, it mentions structural imbalances. Growth might happen mostly in cities, leaving rural areas behind, or maybe only in certain industries. This can create regional disparities and social tension.
Wow. So it really is this powerful force with, like, incredible potential benefits, but also some serious potential harms, environmental, social, economic, that need careful watching.
That tension is really central, I think, to how the document presents it. Growth is shown as, well, pretty vital for prosperity and opportunity, but the message is clear. It needs to be managed responsibly. You have to think about the potential downsides.
So as you've heard, economic growth is it's way more complex than just a single number going up. Mm-hmm. It involves really understanding how we define it, how we measure it, like that crucial difference between nominal and real GDP we talked about. Mm-hmm. Understanding what drives it, both the demand pull and the supply push. And being aware of its wide-ranging effects, the good stuff like jobs and better living standards, but also the potential cost to the environment and society.
Yeah, the document really wraps up by stressing that balance. Balancing economic development with, you know, protecting the environment and ensuring social fairness. It suggests that for growth to really work for everyone now and in the future, you just can't ignore those other factors.
And that kind of leaves us with a pretty big question to think about, doesn't it? As you hear people talk about the economy or GDP figures, given all this complexity, how do we actually aim for economic development that isn't just about making more stuff, but is genuinely inclusive, benefiting everyone, and sustainable? So it improves life today without wrecking the planet or limiting opportunities for future generations.
That's the challenge.
It really is. It goes way beyond just the numbers into the kind of future we actually want to build, something to keep mulling over as you explore these ideas.
Yeah.